I have been to Epcot. I have been to the Norwegian attraction at Epcot. Everything in Disney World, of course, is an attraction. It's not a ride, it's an attraction. I've been to the Norwegian attraction. There is a ride in there, and that ride is a simulation of a trip down the fjords. You end up in the North Sea, drilling for oil in a storm or something like that. And then when it's over, there's a movie. And you watch the movie and you get to see all about beautiful Norway, blah, 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 blah. And like all good attractions, when it's over, there's a shop and you can buy things. And I have been on this ride and I've seen that movie and I have been in that shop and I have bought from the shop. What I bought was a small statue, a little metal thing about an inch high. It was a statue of, well, we'll get back to that. I have also been to Norway, the real Norway. I have taken a boat down, a ferry, down from the hotel that Kaiser Wilhelm was sleeping at when the assassination of Sarajevo took place in 1914. There's this wonderful hotel on the fjords, and I stayed at that hotel, not while Kaiser Wilhelm was there, but later. You take a boat down through the fjords. Beautiful, absolutely the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And you end up in a city called Bergen. And in the city of Bergen, I was walking around. And of course, there's shops in the city of Bergen. And in the city of Bergen, I went into one of these shops and I bought a little statue. It is of the same ilk as the statue I bought at Disney World. It's a little metal thing about an inch high. One of the statues I bought was of a Viking ship. The other statue I bought was of a horse. Both of these statues are on the windowsill of my kitchen. So if you look out the window, you will see both these statues. And I was standing there yesterday, and this is true, I'm not making this up. I was standing there yesterday, and I'm looking at these two little statues, these two little trinkets or charms or whatever you want to call them, the one of the ship and the one of the horse. And as I looked at them, I realized I did not know which one I had gotten at Disney World and which one I had gotten at Bergen. And this is the crux of what Baudrillard is talking about. Now let's look at these two items. One of them, the one from Norway, is a sign, if you will, a memento, whatever you want to call it, but in the world of Pomo, we call these things signs, a sign of Norway, the real Norway, a symbol of my trip down the fjords. It's a very straightforward step from the real thing to this sign. Let's look at the other one, the one from Disney World. Now, this is a memento of what? It's a memento of having gone to Disney World. There's no question about that. It's also a memento of visiting a simulation of the real thing that I also did. So in other words, I have a memento of an unreal or simulated event. The problem, the crux of the problem, is I look at the two objects and I cannot tell the difference between them insofar as I don't know which is a memento from a real place and which is a memento from an unreal place, which is a memento of a simulated place. I have lost the ability to distinguish between reality and unreality. When Baudrillard talks about the loss of reality, that is exactly what he is talking about. Our memories are now entirely comprised of mixed, unsolvable problems. I can't solve the problem of which of these Norwegian trinkets is from Norway and which of these is from a simulacrum or a simulation of Norway. I am lost. Baudrillard would be proud. And just let me throw in one aside before we get started. And that is, in fact, Baudrillard would suggest that my trip down the real fjords was also not real, because it was a tourist event, organized for tourists. It is, in fact, the Norwegians creating a simulation of the Norwegian existence. That is where Baudrillard gets really, really complicated. And that's the kind of stuff we're going to talk about when we look at his book. We are going to talk about the book Simulacra and Simulation. This book was written in about 1980 or so, and actually it's a series of essays, not a book from start to finish about one thing, but just a collection of materials written at about that time. We should start with a little bit about Baudrillard himself. He was born in 1929. He is still alive at the time that I am giving this presentation. He's born in the Champagne country of France and has pretty much spent his life as an academic in France. Now, I do trust that you've read this book before listening to this material. I think it would be hard to understand the material that I'm going to talk about without at least trying to read the book first. But when I say trying to read the book, I really mean trying to read the book. It's not an easy book. You have to imagine Baudrillard not sitting down to say, okay, I'm going to write a book starting at point A and working my way from B to C to D, etc., 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 starting with a premise, working his way through logical analysis to a conclusion. It doesn't work that way for this writer. It's more as if he's sitting around in a cafe in Paris, smoking those horrible Gauloises cigarettes that smell like dead camels. And I don't mean dead camel cigarettes. Drinking way too much coffee and probably way too much wine at the same time. And if anything, instead of beginning with a premise and then explaining the premise, he seems to begin with his conclusion and then sort of dance around the analysis and sometimes never even does give you what the premise is that got you there in the first place. There just simply is no logical procession from beginning to end. So it's very hard for us to read this and figure this out at a very simple level of, okay, I'm going to start this, I get it, and here's where he explains what he is talking about. He doesn't write in declarative sentences, or at least his translator hasn't translated it from or into declarative sentences. There's just a phrase will be a sentence, or a word will be a sentence, or he'll say a word and that'll be a sentence, and some other word that modifies the previous word is a sentence. There's a whole lack of clear exposition in the material. Makes it very difficult to read. On top of that, a lot of the material is quite dated. So I say, try to read this book, but I don't expect you to be able to grasp a lot of it, mostly because some of this stuff is so dated. I mean, this is stuff that happened when he was writing the book, or right before he wrote the book, and if you weren't there at the time, it is extremely obscure material, and for you to look up and find out what exactly he's talking about would probably take you more time than reading the book and that the book is worth, if you want to know the truth. However, there is some material in here that is really clear as far as Baudrillard is concerned, as clear as Baudrillard is going to get. And That's the material we're going to talk about in this discussion. I just want to say one more thing about the style of the writing. I said he doesn't write in declarative sentences, or often he doesn't write in sentences at all. He gets caught up in the meaning of the words. He'll write a word, and I get the impression he writes this word and looks at it and thinks about it and writes some other word that comes around as he meditates on the meaning. He'll write a word, he'll write about the meaning, he'll invert the meanings of the words that he's writing from one sentence to the next. And I suggest there may be a method to this. I do suggest that he may be poking at his own simulacra. This will make sense to you later on. But if in fact the writing of something is certainly a step away from the reality, playing around with that writing is the kind of thing that somebody who is interested in playing around with simulacra would be interested in. I just throw that out as a thought, something to think about. What we need to do, starting out, is offer a definition, or maybe two definitions, which is more than Baudrillard ever does. Let's look first at a simulation. Half of the title. Let's look at what the word simulation means. A simulation is a recreation or an imitation or a pretense of something. I'm going to simulate something means I'm going to recreate it, attempt to recreate that thing. The closer the simulation is to the real thing, presumably the better. That's beside the point. A simulation is an attempt to redo a real thing. A simulacrum is a recreation or an imitation of something that doesn't exist. So a simulation is a recreation of something that does exist, and a simulacrum is a recreation of something that doesn't exist. And we'll explain that by giving you some examples shortly. There's another concept that you have to understand that you can get from this book by pulling it out like teeth from the back of the book's mouth, and that's the concept of hyperreality. Hyperreality is the reality that exists inside a simulacrum, the reality that exists inside the recreation of something that doesn't exist. Hyperreality, according to Baudrillard, is more, quote, real than reality. And those who are in the simulacrum experiencing hyperreality are not aware that their reality is hyperreality and not reality. That is an explanation of the Matrix, as in the Matrix film. You may recall that in the beginning of the movie, when Neo is still in his apartment, somebody comes to his place and wants to get some tapes or discs or something like that, and he uses a copy of a book to hide the material. The copy of the book he hides the material in is simulacra and simulation. There are about three sentences in this book that could be said to inform the film of The Matrix. And good luck finding those three sentences, but one of them is that our society comprises nothing but building blocks rearranged endlessly without meaning. And needless to say, the computer program that creates The Matrix is that kind of building block thing. But I'll be honest with you, I've seen books talking about the film The Matrix and trying to relate it to Baudrillard and to simulacra and simulation, and it's a stretch. It's an absolute stretch. Something tells me that the people who were able to make the second and third Matrix films probably couldn't understand an awful lot of what Baudrillard was trying to say. But that's neither here nor there. It probably also behooves us to define the concepts of modernism and postmodernism, and I think the best way to do that, at least in terms of talking about Baudrillard, is to use his own words. This is a quote now. "I am a nihilist. I observe, I accept, I assume the immense process of destruction of appearances and of the seduction of appearances in the service of meaning, representation, history, criticism, etc. That is the fundamental fact of the 19th century. The true revolution in the 19th century of modernity is the radical destruction of appearances, the disenchantment of the world and its abandonment to the violence of interpretation and of history. I observe, I accept, I assume. I analyze the second revolution, that of the 20th century, that of postmodernity, which is the immense process of the destruction of meaning, equal to the earlier destruction of appearances. He who strikes with meaning is killed by meaning." What's he talking about here? The modernist analyzed the world around them and essentially created the history. They understood the meaning underneath the history, shall we say. A good example of this, and possibly the best example of this for people like Baudrillard, is Karl Marx. Theories of history, like Karl Marx's theory of history. I mean, we can't overestimate the effect that Marx had on the world, and certainly the effect he had on academics. There is a whole body of literature, by the way, trying to analyze whether or not Baudrillard is a Marxist or anti-Marxist or neo-Marxist, etc., etc. Doesn't particularly matter. People like Marx were looking to explain the meaning of the world that we lived in. And for those of you who are caveman fans, you remember when we talked about the modernist, insofar as art was concerned, the abstract artists who were trying to explain color and composition and line, and of course trying to connect with their inner selves. They were trying to get underneath the appearances, moving away from the representational art to the meaning of that art. The postmodernist destroys meaning, or maybe meaning is already destroyed by the time we get to postmodernity. The way that Baudrillard looks at it is that there is so much information in the postmodern world that the postmodern world implodes under the weight of it. This is the destruction of meaning. This is the implosion that he talks about. Another quote, "A destiny of inertia for a saturated world. The phenomena of inertia are accelerating, if one can say that. The masses are caught up in a gigantic process of inertia through acceleration." Too much information. When you reach a point of saturation, information saturation, meaning implodes, meaning goes away. And that is the state of postmodernism. Let's move back to the beginning of the book. I took that from the end. Let's move back to the beginning of the book. The most important of the articles in here, or the essays in here, is the one called The Precession of Simulacra. If you read nothing but that one, you've done a good job. And we're going to be concentrating mostly on that one, The Precession of Simulacra. Anyhow, let's look back at the beginning. There is a fantastic image at the beginning of the book. And that is the image of the life-sized map. Now, this comes from the writer Jean-Louis Borges, and it's just a small couple of paragraphs, I guess, in a Borges story. And Baudrillard uses this little image to set up his idea of the precession, preceding of simulacra. He calls it the most beautiful allegory of simulation. And this is a map so detailed that it ends up covering the territory exactly. And in the postmodern world, the territory no longer precedes the map, nor does it survive it. It is nevertheless the map that precedes the territory, the procession of simulacra. In other words, prior to the postmodern age, the land came first, followed by the map, the life-size map. In the postmodern age, the life-size map comes first, followed by the land. But the point that Baudrillard is trying to make here is that the fable, no matter how we slice it, the fable doesn't work anymore. Real isn't real because no imaginary envelops it. The era of simulation is inaugurated by a liquidation of all referentials. Worse, with their artificial resurrection in the systems of signs, a material more malleable than meaning, in that it lends itself to all systems of equivalence, to all binary oppositions, to all combinatory algebra. It is a question of substituting the signs of the real for the real. The problem is that we can't tell the difference between the map and the real place. We can't simulate anymore because we can't tell the difference between simulation and reality. We have lost the difference that makes the fable work. We have lost the difference. And he gives some examples of this. He talks about how you can't simulate illness because there is no way to tell the difference between a simulated illness and a real illness. There is no way to tell the difference between a simulated mental illness and a real mental illness. There is no way to tell the difference between the simulation of homosexuality and real homosexuality. And the reference he's using here is to getting out of the army. So he'll say that if, you know, in the day where if you claim to be a homosexual, you would get out of the army, whether or not you were a homosexual didn't particularly matter, because the army was incapable of telling the difference. So therefore, it had to act as if the simulation was real, or more to the point, they just, since they couldn't tell the difference, it was all the same. He also goes through a great long explanation of people simulating a bank robbery. If you were to simulate a bank robbery, how would the authorities know that this was a simulation and not the real thing? They wouldn't, because in your simulation, you're doing everything exactly the same as you would do if, in fact, you were robbing the bank. And therefore, the authorities, not being able to tell the difference between the real thing and a simulation, have no choice but to act as if it is the real thing. Or, again, doesn't matter if it's the real thing or not. They are going to take the same actions either way. We need to understand a little bit about signs. And again, I refer you back to caveman and the semiotics discussion there. But remember, a sign is a representation of something. Okay, so here's what Baudrillard says. This is going to be simulation opposed to representation, the sign being the representation of something. Okay, representation stems from the principle of the equivalence of the sign and of the real. In other words, in a representational concept, the sign is equivalent to the real thing. That's the whole point of the sign, is to be representative of the real thing. Simulation, on the contrary, stems from the utopia of the principle of equivalence. The utopia of the principle of equivalence, which is the radical negation of the sign as a value, from the sign as the reversion and death sentence of every reference. Whereas representation attempts to absorb simulation by interpreting it as false representation. Simulation envelops the whole edifice of representation itself as a simulacrum. In other words, if you simulate something, you're not trying to represent it anymore. You're trying to become it. You kill it by becoming it. There are, according to Baudrillard, four phases, successive phases of the image. And he talks about these a lot in the book. First phase is the reflection of a profound reality. The second phase, it masks and denatures a profound reality. Third phase, it masks the absence of a profound reality. Fourth phase, it has no relation to any reality whatsoever. It is its own pure simulacrum. Okay, let's look at this again. The image, the successive phases of the image. The first one is that it is the reflection, the sign, pure sign, representation. Second level is that, second phase rather, is that it masks and denatures. So it's hiding the reality. The third phase of simulacra is that, I'm sorry, the third phase of the image is that it masks the absence of reality. There is no reality in the third one, and the image, the simulation, is hiding the fact that there is no reality. And the fourth phase is the no relation to any reality whatsoever. Pure simulacrum. You have to understand that somehow to really understand what Baudrillard is talking about, because he applies those four phases everywhere. So let's just look at it one more time. First phase, pure representation. Second of all, hiding something, changing it, masking it. Third phase, the meaning is gone. In the third phase, the sign remains. The sign is hiding the fact that there is no reality behind itself. Fourth phase, and this is the final phase, this is where in your image, whatever that image is, remember the image was some kind of representation, there is in that image no relation to any reality whatsoever. It is pure simulacrum at that point. Remember, simulacrum was the recreation of something that doesn't exist.